Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Amy.
Housekeeping. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9. Please join me in welcoming our panel. We have Aaliyah and Jason. I will read the first paragraph on page 80, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each reading. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Page 80, the chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Aaliyah is going to start.
All right. My name's Aaliyah and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Aaliyah.
I had my last drink February 14th of 2016. I have a home group, Westside Young and Sober. We meet on Tuesdays at 7:30 on Zoom. So you could be at home in your slippers. Okay. We are a 12-step in tradition group and we'd love to have you there. I have a service commitment within my home group. And that's all I got for right now. I say all of that because I take a little bit more interest in other people and things than I once did before. I had plenty of domestic troubles when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I started drinking at a very young age. And when I realized this new identity that I had by drinking, like I started getting all types of attention. And I love attention. And so even though I was with that loyal and courageous individual, I dragged that relationship through the mud. She tried to hold on for dear life. It did not work out at all. And there's a lot of things that I have done that I don't like to admit to myself still that it happened. But time and time again, she tried to get me to stop drinking, and I couldn't. I would like to say I could have gotten sober at the expense of, because of that relationship, but I simply could not. I did a lot of sweet nothings, made all sorts of promises, and word would get back to her. And that was really bad. It made for a lot of arguments. But even with the people that I was mixed up with, I didn't have the capacity to be there for them either. Drink was way more important. So they get the sweet nothings and everything. And or I just might get a taste of my own medicine. Like they're just here for a good time and not a long time. And that hurt too. And that also makes for more drinking. And I can even go as far as talk about my mom with this, about her becoming resentful and uncommunicative. I mean, how can you communicate with someone that's numbed all the time and lack rhyme or reason for anything that they do? I made a lot of sweet promises and nothings to her too. she started setting up boundaries. Hey, don't come home drunk past midnight. If you're out past midnight, stay where you are. I got that a lot. No drinking in the house. But then I start stashing bottles all over the place. there's plenty of examples like that, to the point where she had to just throw up her hands and was just like, you can't live here anymore. You got to go. And I would like to say that broke my heart, but that pissed me clean the H off. And it's not until I lived with myself for probably about 2 months, 2.5 months, that I actually came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what you guys had. I didn't want what you guys had, but I felt like maybe, you know, maybe there might be something here. Even if I couldn't put words to what that something was. That's all I got.
Jason, alcoholic.
Hi, Jason.
My sobriety date is March 17, 2012. Simple Actions is my home group. I have a sponsor that I don't call that often, but I probably should. And when you're sitting up here, you kind of realize that you don't do that stuff that often. But domestic problems. Like, I didn't think I had anything until, you know, I come through, and like Aaliyah was stating, you know, I throw landmines down and then I don't care who walks through them, whether they're a partner or anything. What was good about me is I lived with a same sex partner, and we were both kind of alcoholic. So it was kind of nice to be able to bounce that off. We got to a point where usually every other night I had to apologize. So you just mark on a calendar who apologized last. And that's how we kind of lived our life for a while. And it was a train wreck. And then I had a 2-year-old daughter at that time that just got to witness all that drama. And the relationships I had were, you know, just usually using people. What can I get out of you for this amount of time? And when it talks about those, you know, out in the club, and I didn't go out to a club, but, you know, I love that social media aspect where you post a shirtless pic and everyone comments on you. Now they're like all over you. And I'm like, I live for that stuff. And that's the stuff I did. And then I find myself in my phone living on those comments as opposed to living my actual life. And living with another alcoholic was kind of good because I'd clear some things off him. I remember I asked him, I said, hey, do you think I have a drinking problem? And he said, no, you probably just need to stop by 10 p.m. and then just maybe just watch how much you drink. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I asked someone, so I felt validated that I got that answer. So, you know, I continued to drink heavily because I didn't think I had the problem. But, you know, I constantly had those voices in my head saying, oh yeah, you'll be better if you do this. Okay. Well, you won't have these feelings if you drink. And then I can remember I worked at a legal job and I was Googling it, how do you know if you're an alcoholic? And pretty much that should answer your question right there.
Yes.
I would bring my lunch to work. And I remember I got to the point where I had to hold my spoon up to my mouth because I was just constantly shaking food off my fork and spoon. And I still didn't think I had the problem. And I would go home. I would sit at work all day and be like, okay, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm not going to drink. And you know, as soon as I walk in that goddamn door, I went right to the basement for a bottle of vodka and throw some Gatorade in there because why not? That means I'm a healthy drinker. So I'm not an alcoholic. And that's the crazy stuff we tell our mind. You know, sometimes we switch to liquor, sometimes we switch to beer, but you know, my mind was telling me if I drank it with Gatorade, I was healthier than someone drinking it straight. And those domestic problems would continue. I had an ex-wife, and I mean, things were bad between us only because I made them bad. I made her out to be an enemy in my eyes, even though she was looking out for our child. And I didn't care. I mean, it took me, I would call her every name in the book just because, you know why? I validated myself, and I would already check her off the books. Like, you know what? She's nothing. I made her everything she is. No, she needs me to get by in life. And I'm like, she didn't need me for anything. And then being at home with an alcoholic, you know, it's constantly, we're both at odds always because we've got the quirkiness and we both have those voices going on in our heads. So it made tough living. Lucky for me, I eventually got into a self-referral, but it's just like that stuff even continued. And then the way I looked at going into a facility, it would stop those domestic problems, but I had no communication with the outside world. But it just it made me look back and be like, all right, well, at least going here will give me 28 days break from drinking. And that's all I thought it was going to be. It was this whole program afterwards, but I'll share more afterwards. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to skip over to page 82 for the next reading. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patients mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing."
Oh, man, there's so much that I want to talk on from here, but I know my mind is not going to hold it in place. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. Now, like I mentioned, I started drinking when I was younger. And so my place of residence was with my mom and my two younger siblings. And I was also a student athlete. And so I was out the house a lot. And I wound up getting injured and lost that identity of I'm a basketball player. And I had to assume another identity. Mm-hmm. I was like literally the hole in a donut. And so I assumed this other identity, and my job was to pick up my siblings from elementary school. And I'll be in the city playing in Toys R Us. I'm from New York. I'll be on 42nd Street playing in the Toys R Us out there, walking past TRL. I remember one time I was so late that my sister had to get taken down to the police department to get picked up. My mother was pissed. And it was just like, I just had this whole like, well, I mean, we know where she at. She good, you know? But that's the attitude that I bring to the table. I got to have my fun singing on the subways or something, doing something crazy with some of the people I was hanging out with at that time. And but it would get worse. So then my mom loses trust in me. And I've done other countless things to where mom has lost trust in me. And I start doing it to my siblings. My sibling is getting picked on in school. She's not legally a midget. She's 4'11", but I call her a midget. And she was getting bullied in school and at home by me. Her name is Applehead in my book. She was having really some real problems at this junior high school. And I kept telling her, don't worry. I'm gonna come up there. I'm gonna take care of it. But I'd be drunk in bed, you know, like I'm not going to school, you know, I'm trying to wake up, you know, and slowly it erodes the trust that my sister had in me and the reliability. She couldn't rely on me. My brother, the same, like it just slowly, alcohol was just taken to where it's just like they just looked at me as like a stranger, like, oh, she's here again, you know, she's here. I remember one time my brother, we was having a conversation. He's 4 years younger than me. And I'm like, you hate me right now? You know, having these heart to hearts. I had no heart in it. You know what I'm saying? I'm just listening. And I'm like, you hate me? You hate me? You want to punch me in the... And like, but he's crying. None of that reached me. He definitely wanted to punch me in the... But growing up, I was his protector. And it was just like my hero. You know, he used to tell me that all the time. It's like watching my hero just die, you know? And my behavior, I started drinking at 15. I got kicked out at 21. So like I have example upon example, incident upon incident of where I eroded the affections, the love, the trust. I've broken my family's heart in a million different places. So sobriety isn't enough. Like I have to try to show up in their lives some way, somehow today. And not act like I care, but like actually care, you know, about what's going on with them. Because for a lot of years, I didn't. I mean, fun fact, it wasn't until I was 21 that I like really acknowledged I had siblings. And by then I had six of them. So like, I wanted to be an only child my whole life. Like I grew up with this attitude, you know, basketball was my first drug. And then when I lost that, I, you know, alcohol was my thing. So that's all I got.
Thank you. Yeah. 82.
Yeah, there's plenty we should do at home, you know, and like where it talks about the tornado, I'm come from an alcoholic family, and it was a circus growing up. My earliest memory of my parents was watching my dad drive over my mom's leg after she jumped out of his truck. And if that doesn't keep me from drinking, I don't know what will. But, you know, for me growing up, I saw all that going on. And I stuffed it away somehow. I mean, I did a lot of recreational drugs. Alcohol wasn't my jam back in the day. But once I lit that fuse of alcohol when I joined the military, and it really shone upon me, I decided to switch to alcohol. But once I lit that fuse, I was off. And my tornado may not look the same as my family's and my parents, but you know, I was doing some really hurtful things, not only to my daughter. I remember my daughter looking up at me. I'm pouring vodka. I stored it in the freezer because I didn't have time for ice cube. And she's looking at me and she's like, what are you drinking? And I said, it's water. She said, you drink a lot of water. And I said, yeah, thanks. Keep you healthy. But it's like those things and all those broken promises, you know, of like, oh, we'll do this. We'll do this. I promise. But oh, dad's passed out sleeping a little late. And it was those things. And then it started affecting my work life, and then it started affecting my home life and my life with my, I didn't take to working as a sponsor with these. I would have never even thought that I had to list my parents down on this list, because I was like, the shit they put me through. And then it was brought to my attention, like, were you the best son you could have been? Mm. I'm like, ooh, hold on, let me get back to you on that. And then I had to really think, and no, I wasn't. Like, I could have been way better. There's a lot of things that I look back now in my life, and it's like, you know, I always had this selfishness and self-centeredness where the world revolved around me. I was the youngest out of two older brothers. I'm 42. I have one who's 43 and I have one who's 44. And our birthdays are April, May, and June.
Oh, wow.
And we're like Irish triplets or something. And so it was a show with that. And being the youngest, you know, I took the brunt of a lot of their pain. And, you know, I was good at masking. I knew how to get people to like me. I knew how to be the life of the party. So when it came time where, you know, I lit this fuse of alcohol, like, I just used people. I used you for what I could get out of you. I continue to use you for what I get out of you. You know, I remember going into a mediator, me and my ex-wife went to for custody. She wanted primary physical custody, but we could share joint custody. And I mean, I was still drinking. And I'm like, well, how about you lower the child support and I'll sign away on it. And she did. And I'm thinking about, like, who fucking does that? And that's where my mind was at. Like, oh yeah, I'll take lower child support. Like, and you know, it's that stuff I look back at now and it's like, man, it's those living amends, talk about later next time. But it's like, I thank God that my daughter was so young and didn't have to see how much of a train wreck I actually was. You know, there was a time where, you know, we ran our mouths to the wrong people, me and my spouse coming home from somewhere, and we wound up getting our asses kicked by two high schooler kids. Wound up with a broken eye socket and a concussion. And then being in the military, the Coast Guard investigative services got involved, and the stories weren't lining up between the Norfolk Police Department and what I was trying to provide them. I was trying to provide them with accurate, inaccurate truth, or we call those alternative lies. Facts. Alternative facts, we call those.
Fake news.
And, you know, and I worked at legal at the time. So I bring back to the, you know, eating that lunch. But, you know, my mindset is to get everyone off my trail. So I had people, you know, you always have those people, you know, try to reach out. Hey, do you drink a little bit too much? Why are you so close? Why are you in my space? So I did the right thing. You know, I had a candle warmer and I put a candle on it and have a fan scenting the office. Like, those are those things that, you know, normal people wouldn't do. Unless you're trying to hide something. And so, yeah, hearts are broken. I remember even the thing with my ex-wife, like, she tried to work with me so much. And I just kept pushing her away and pushing her away and pushing her away. Even, you know, I always wanted to be deeply resented at her spouse, who was another father figure in my daughter's life. But it's like, I was like, well, what if she likes him better than me? Like, so I just got to be on the offensive always. So I have one of those minds too, that when I'm drinking, I think of 10,000 reactions of how I think you're going to say something to me. So in my mind, I already have an arsenal of what I can fire back. And if you by means don't shoot the first shot, I will drop an A-bomb on you, because that's the type of person I am. So after that tornado, you know, I come out sometimes and I say, hey, you know, the foxhole prayer sometimes, or the next day I'm like, oh, hey, can I come pick Kaylee up? Do you know what you said last night? No, sorry. Don't remember. Is that better? Let me apologize. And those are the things that, you know, some people don't forget that. Mm-hmm. The farmer don't see anything, hear my end, rather wind stop blowing. But, you know, sometimes when you feel the wind stops blowing, the wind didn't stop blowing. That's all I got for that. Thanks.
Thank you. The next reading is on page, we're still on 83. Have we done page 83?
No,
yet?
We just finished
83. Okay, we're on 83 now. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
Gosh, I want to talk about this whole thing once again. All right. So that young lady that I had the opportunity to date back in the day, once I had made amends to her, instead of just saying sorry, I got to admit that I was wrong. I just felt like we supposed to just get back to normal. Like, you know, did I leave anything out? Everything sounds about accurate. I don't think I asked her. No, I did ask her if she had any feedback for me or, you know, whatever. I just thought we were supposed to be two peas in a pod again, just working on this relationship. And that's just not how it works. I did the same thing with my brother. Made amends to him, and like expected him, like, we're this, you know, brother and sister squad again. I'm your hero again, you know, whatever. I wouldn't say hero, but like, we're supposed to be loving and kind now, and you should accept me back into your life full force, because that's how I am. It's like all or nothing. But what both of them taught me simultaneously was I'm not obligated to a seat at the table. They don't ever have to let me back into their lives. And my brother had got really sick. He had he was diagnosed with Graves' disease, and he wasn't taking care of it at the time. So I'm like, you know, hey, bro, call me, like checking up on him. He's not picking up the phone. And I am losing it. But it's just like, if he wanted to speak to me, he would have picked up the phone. If he wanted me to walk with him through that part of his life, he would invite me in instead of me trying to bulldoze my way into someone's life. I mean, that is my disposition. That's what I do. Eventually, I guess once he went to the doctor and everything, but eventually we started talking and he let me back in. But that was a very, very humbling experience. And it also brought into light how I was treating that ex, you know, because I'm constantly trying to bulldoze my way back into her life. And like, she's not given any leeway. There's no leeway being given. The rope is taut. We are not going anywhere, you know. And I had to realize, like, I'm bulldozing my way. That's like, how inconsiderate and selfish is that? Like, I really want things to be how they used to be. You know, I apologized about the drunk in me and the things that I did and situations I put you through. But like, we should be two peas in a pod again, you know? And that's just like, you know, what about the dreams we had all them years ago? You know, like, what about those? And it has taken a long time for at least that relationship to mend itself. We're not getting married or anything like that, but for her to even let me into her life, period, you know, to see me as I am now to how I was before. And so when it says our behavior will convince them more than our words, but that's only if I live this spiritual way of life, because I am still hell on wheels without doing this. I will bulldoze my way through, or at least try to. I was never really successful at it, but you know, I give it my best to bulldoze into situations or places that probably aren't meant for me, but it's something that I want. And you know, unless I practice this way of life, beautiful things and moments like I had with my brother and with my ex, and even Applehead, she calls me for advice, like real, like we have that. She is my best friend. My little sister is my best friend, and this really truly only because of the results of doing the 12 step, particularly this part of the book, where she doesn't have, no one has to get mad at me for having, I mean, no one has to worry about how I am going to react if they say something I dislike. You are allowed to be who you are instead of me trying to strong arm you into what I want you. And so that's the blessing of this reconstruction.
So yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead of remorseful mumbling. You know, I did that things. I love drama. I just went to Facebook. I was on in the van getting a ride up to the Farley Center, and I fucking just did my whole steps on Facebook. I said, I was told I have a drinking problem. I want to let you all know I'm going to get the help that I deserve. So it's just like, you know, I quickly analyzed it, and I love Facebook for the fact that every year it shows you those reminders. So it's beautiful to look at, and it's like, you know, even on my way up, one, I knew I was going to rehab. So what do? I got fucked up because I know you drink. I had cable TV. You drink as much liquor as possible. And then I was seeing posts. Oh well, good luck. You know, we love you. And I was getting people on my side, so I felt really good about myself on that van ride up there. And then when I got checked in there, you know, they gave me these pills and I took them and I felt even more messed up. And I looked at that lady and I said, if I had these, I wouldn't need them.
I've said that before.
She said, you are in the right place, sweetie. So it's like, you know, I look back on that now and, you know, it's just how selfish and self-centered I was. I thought I was doing you all a favor by reconstructing myself. When actuality, I just thought, again, it was the 28 days off of work that the government paid. You know, but I do remember sitting in rehab and getting a big book on my second day there. And, you know, thinking to myself, okay, well, I got to think really hard about this. Do I want to keep living the way I was living? Or do I want to make a change? And, you know, the first day wasn't really, I got there on the 16th of March. And don't even count it as sobriety day, because that's how messed up I was. And you would have thought that I was going somewhere exotic, because I had to call my spouse the next day to bring me actual clothes, because I packed like I was going to the Betty Ford Clinic, and it was all swimsuits and exotic outing wear, and it was nothing to say to suck. Yeah, so it puts me in perspective when I had to sober up the next day and realize, wow, I didn't even bring anything to wear. But as that time goes on, I do remember like day three calling my spouse and saying, I don't think this is just a phase. I think I really need to hold on to this if I'm gonna become something and fix this whole issue I got with alcohol. And it's the same with my ex-wife. You know, I didn't communicate with her. I know I really got in an argument when I was in rehab because I wanted my daughter to come up and visit me. And she's like, I don't think it's appropriate. I'm like, well, how do you know what's appropriate for her? Like, she's my daughter too. And that's, again, that selfishness and self-centeredness. So I don't care about anyone else. I want her to see that sideshow going up on there. Like, and I look back on it now and I'm glad she didn't. Like, there was a lot of stuff going on up there that she didn't need a witness. But it's that thing where it says our behavior will convince them more than our words. And, you know, this came like full circle. You know, once I got out of rehab, I did that thing. I jumped into AA meetings and I looked, you know, got a sponsor as quick as possible. And I'm looking at my behaviors and, you know, trying to go through the big book. Eventually I did go through the steps with a sponsor. But then again, with my ex-wife, you know, it was always hard to put that stuff on paper. And the worst part was finding out where I was at fault too, and before making the amends. And so I did my steps three times already, and she keeps making my amends list. And she asked, how many times do we got to keep doing this? I said, probably until our daughter's out of the house and in college somewhere, but maybe for the rest of my life. Because the way I look at it now is, and where the actions speak louder than words, is probably about 4 years sober, her husband came to me and said that she had an issue and was asking for my advice. And never in my wildest dreams would I thought that would happen. That's that, you know, that's my action speaking for my work. That, you know, I show up, I'm doing this stuff, you know, I'm making that change again, because you know how many broken promises I had, but to be able to hear them ask for help and be able to be there willing to give help was amazing. And you know, it wound up coming out to nothing, but even today now, I still, you know, keep in good communication, but I can always forget about that and just have a rant and take that back. But you know, again, like I can't expect them to forget all my wild past, even with the amount of sobriety I got, because you know, I did treat a lot of people like shit. And you know, some people don't forget that. I can make amends all day long, but you know, some people like to hold on to stuff. But it's not for me to determine how long they hold on for. It's for me to, you know, get that stuff out of me. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to continue on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
Okay. There are a lot of wrongs that I can't make right with, especially my siblings that lived with me at the time. But I can honestly say that if I could, I would write them. I've imprinted on my siblings, regrettably. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. There are four shipmates that I served with, and I owe them an amends. And I haven't been able to make that amends since coming to this program. I don't know where they are in the world right now. But if by chance they pop up, say, on a social media feed, or something like that, I will not hesitate to make my amends. I have to be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble, without being servile or scraping or arrogant because I can be a bit arrogant in amends making too, like I did with my ex, and think everything should be chummy chum chum. I said I was wrong. You know, get over it, you know. I feel like I can't generate these things in myself. Like I really have to pray to be sensible and tactful, like to know when to say and how to say what I need to convey, and to be considerate of them, and not try to get this off just to make me feel better. And to be humble about it. For a long time, especially in early sobriety, when I was just going through this, I always thought humble meant humiliation. So it took me a long time to understand what humble means. And that's just, you know, what to me is deep sincerity, and remorse for what I did, or didn't do. Depends on the situation. I like, as God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. That is like my line. That is my go-to. Because sometimes it's easy to make an amends to someone, you know, like you kind of know them, you know what I'm saying? It's easier to go to a friend than someone who probably despises you, you know? And to be able to deal with them tactfully, sensibly, to be considerate, and to be humble without seeming like I'm pleading for anything. And that's more in my civilian day-to-day life than anyone that was on my amends list, to be quite honest. There's a gentleman I work with right now, and he's in a tough spot because he's the only one in his shop. He's a machinist. And we're manufacturing like parts and stuff for ships. So he's the only one in there. He's stressed the heck out. And like if we correspond in emails, like he gets real attitude-y, you know? And I really have to sit there and like be sensible, tactful, and considerate in my response and humble, you know, like you're not walking all over me because you have your little attitude right now. I understand that. However, you know, but I can't write that in the email. That's in my head. But these things help me deal with people on a day-to-day basis. Even when I'm wrong, like I'm fairly new at the trade, so I'm wrong a lot. So I have to just be humble about it and not just go like, oh, well, I made this mistake again. You know, that's how I feel like servile and scrapping is. Like I'm just like pleading for something. I don't like that feeling. It doesn't feel good. Anyway, that's all I have.
As per my last email. So I thankfully didn't have to write any letters, but a lot of my amends I did sit on. I either felt unjustly like going to the wood show weakness. And again, with my parents, like I feel like I had to dabble with that a little bit and speak to my sponsor a couple times about, because I still didn't understand that aspect of having to do that. But, you know, I finally did make those amends, one to my mom and one to my dad. And, you know, I felt a lot better. The only thing I got out of it is like a safe way to like establish boundaries with them nowadays. But like another one of my resentments was the Coast Guard. And like, how do you get resentful if someone's paying you to do the bare minimum for so long? And you know, that one, that's one of those living amends where I have to make sure that I show up every day, that I show up and I do what I say I'm going to do when I'm going to. And I got to the point where, you know, I'm in a customer service job and tough sometimes because people want what they want. You got to give them facts. And you just got to, I have to find a nice way to give people facts. And sometimes people don't like that. That I understand. But it's the same with like, I remember my spouse came up to the Farley Center. It was like family day. And it's like, you had to take a step for each time the alcoholic did something to their life. And I swear to God, my spouse stepped from fucking Williamsburg all the way down to Norfolk. And I was so irritated. And I remember getting out of rehab. I said, what the fuck is your problem? And then, you know, that's stuff where I can't judge their side, their wrongs. I can only take a look at what's on my side of the street and make sure that I am correct. And it took a bit to get there. Even with my ex-wife, I didn't want to jump in and say something wrong. So I made sure that I was prepared to sit down. And I asked her, I said, hey, do you have time to sit and talk with me? Like, what do you want to talk about? Would like to sit. Well, if you could give me the time, I'd greatly appreciate it at your convenience. And so we went and sat and had coffee. And you know, it was tough looking her in the face and being like, I'm sorry. Sorry for this. I'm sorry for this. I can't change the fact that I did this, but you know, I'm sorry. And let me know how I can make. She gave me a list of stuff, how to make it right. And I worked through that list and, you know, I got to say, I'm happy. And again, I mean, I've been through my steps a few times and she winds up on that list every time, but we work through that every time. And at this point, it's like, you know, my daughter just turned 15 last week and we all went out to Hibachi. It was me, my husband, her husband. I don't think I could do that if I was still drinking. Like these steps gave me that foundation to be able to live life like that and to be helpful. I had a 15-year-old daughter. Every word I thought was a lie. Like you just ask Google and Google tells you like, but I made the mistake when she was younger. I said, if you're going to lie, just do it confidently because no one will question you. And she's throwing it all in my face at this point. But it's just like, you know, the way I look at it now, that girl has three father figures in her life. Mm-hmm. So God forbid whoever takes her on her first date. So that's all I got.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our last reading of the night is on page 83. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom, and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Okay. When I went through this the first time, all of these things pretty much came true. Every last one of them, especially the regret the past and I wish to shut the door on it. But it really held the key to my freedom. All those experiences I could share with someone else. I'm not living in them in my head anymore. I have these experiences I could share with someone else and help them. And I never thought that, you know, my past would be of good use. But I found out rather quickly that it does. It helps. I didn't feel useless anymore, and self-pity disappeared for a while. All of these things came true. The thing is, the further I am away from the drink and I'm lulled into feeling this sense of okayness, I've learned that to serve myself will only lead me back to drinking. When I start thinking about me again, what's going on with me, my finances, my health, this, that, and the third. Not saying those things shouldn't be monitored, but if that's all that I'm thinking, my comfort, my sense of comfort, then these become, this is not true. And if we are not painstaking about this phase of our development, we will not be amazed before we are halfway through. We will not know a new freedom and a new happiness. And I've sat in there too. But as long as I continue to do. I heard my sponsor in my head just now. if I just do what is prescribed here, especially when it comes to making amends, you know, I know this is probably about, this is a week ahead, but you know, that inventory that we take at night is really, really important, because 20 times out of 10, I owe someone an amends, and I'm not, if I didn't write it down, it's just, yeah, 20 out of 10. It's just swirling around in my head. So it's really, really important that I continue doing the things that I was taught up until this point. And I'm definitely a sometimes slowly type of person. I've only been quick to make mistakes. That's the only time I've been quick about anything. And they will materialize if you work for them. And I start to get this internal gauge. That's all that is, an internal gauge. I'm not stuck in self-pity. I'm not feeling useless. I'm actually trying to suit myself to be of maximum service. Fear of people. I don't like people, but that might be a little bit of fear of people. I've worked through it a lot. Trust me, you should have seen me when I first got here. but I have a freedom that I cannot put into words. I was trapped in a bottle for a long time, and the worshiping of my own thoughts and my own ideas. And I couldn't really see the world in front of me. Everyone was my minion, everybody. Now, when I look at the car next to me, that person has their own thoughts, their own ideas. I never looked at the world in that way before. Like literally it was all about me. You're like Tetris. You need to get out the way so I can speed up and do this and do that, you know? And life isn't like that anymore. Someone's having a bad day. I actually try to render some help. That's not something that I've done before. And like feel good afterwards, no matter how big or how small it is. It's like, you know, well, today's a good day today, you know? And it gives credence to the, as God's people, we stand on our own feet. Cause I was very crippled for a very long time. And I really didn't know how bad it was until I actually gave this program a try. That's all I got.
All right, you got 3 minutes.
All right. So the feeling of uselessness and uselessness and self-pity will disappear. You know, I do find that to happen, except for when I get involved. So a ways around that is, you know, getting out of bed in the morning, saying my prayers, you know, but I'm still selfish and self-centered. The thing is now I can see when that's creeping up on me. And, you know, but those promises do come true again, if I keep myself out and, you know, I help all God's children, not just, you know, I love to take back the day at any given point. I just have to always have that reset available to make sure that I am one with God and his children, because I mean, anything could set me off, cut me off or something. And then I want to show you footage from my dash cam. So it's any little thing that, but that's me getting out of spirituality, like, and just taking my life back. And then I lose that whole feeling. I become useless. And self-pity will always swallow me whole, because those voices will always keep creeping back up unless I keep doing action to keep them quiet. And they love to speak up sometimes. The thing is now, for most of the time when I feel all this stuff, when I feel myself slide out of AA, is like I physically can feel like it hurt and know that I'm purposely causing you aches. And it's like a knife. And it's just like, I like it sometimes. But, you know, I have to stay in this program because I just say, you know, one pill fixed me. I mean, it's a daily reprieve of alcoholism. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you very much.
I like you.
we're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA related announcements? Aaliyah.
My name's Aaliyah and I'm alcoholic. I was about to say my home group. AA 101 is having their anniversary breakfast. Bacon, eggs, waffles, more bacon. And I think they might have some sausage too. I'm not sure though. They are meeting this Sunday at Norfolk Sentara Heart Hospital in the Brick House classroom upstairs. It's a maze, but people will direct you to where you need to be. Breakfast starts at 10, speaker at 11. Bacon at the Heart Hospital with the bacon.
Go ahead. Hey, John. Thanks, John. Go ahead.
Thanks, Ed.
Anybody else? This Friday. Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature is available on the table to my left. If you need a big book, please let one of us know. We'll help you get that taken care of. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to ask me any questions. If you are shy, please make use of our website. Our email is info@simpleactions.net. Someone does monitor that. We will be happy to get you hooked up that way. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. No bacon. Well, maybe, I don't know. In closing, can we please thank again Aaliyah and Jason? Thanks to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to say thank you to our panelists. Grant has volunteered to read the last few paragraphs on page 164. Hey, Grant.
A vision for you, Big Book page one. Our book is meant to be suggested. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. A great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. We will surely meet as you trudge the road of happy destiny.
All right, we have a nice way of closing. All right, John's going to be Stretch Armstrong unless somebody helps him out.
Come on, we can do it. We can do it. One step forward, everybody.
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Stay. Just stay. Don't go nowhere.